Inside Sources.
Inside Sources.
Where KSL offers Utah deeper insights on the news. Here's our host, Boyd Matheson, on KSL News Radio.
Always thrilled to have back on the program with us, Amos Giora. And today we're going to talk about some of the challenges going on in Turkey and Syria after the devastating earthquake there. The death toll continues to mount. Upwards of 20,000 now have perished, and that number will continue to go up. I've exchanged texts with Ambassador Jeff Flake, who is the U.S. ambassador to Turkey, and he just says it's 24/7, and the images on the screen just aren't even close to how horrific the things are on the ground. And Amos, this is a region of the world that you understand really well, and obviously this is going to be a significant challenge for a number of reasons, including just the unrest in the region. But give us some perspective as you watch this play out. What are going to be some of those big challenges in trying to help those people and move things forward?
Good morning. I think, first of all, on a basic human level, we first of all don't know how many people are dead. Two, when dealing with an earthquake, and what complicates it here is it's seriously cold, and weather is not helping. See, the infrastructure, obviously, in Syria is not built for this. And in this area of Turkey, I mean, you can see it. I mean, it's utter and total devastation. It's not Turkey's first earthquake. There was one in 1999. But this is clearly awful. And obviously, the politicking is quick to come.
Yeah.
And I would certainly hope that, easy to say, hard to implement, that we can put the politics aside and focus on overwhelming humanitarian needs, which is, easy to say, hard to implement. Everybody needs to, you know, get their 2 cents in. And I saw the Turkish opposition parties are now blaming the Turkish government for this. And I genuinely have no idea how the Syrian government, I think government in air quotes, not really a Syrian government, how they're going to deal with this. And that it must be so devastating. The Syrians, directly, indirectly, is not important, actually reached out to Israel for assistance. That has never happened before.
Wow.
And you and I both know that there are so many distractions going on in the world, here, there, and everywhere, that this will no longer be front page news shortly.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, it's important to keep in mind there are over, what is it now, 20,000 deceased, and who knows how many still in the rubble.
Yeah.
And I really don't know how you begin the process of rebuilding when the infrastructure poses significant challenges.
Yeah. So,
and that's without even getting into the geopolitics of the region, which, as we both know, is not exactly Switzerland.
Yeah, it definitely is not Switzerland, and those challenges are absolutely real. And then you add on to that the fact that you've got some close to 4 million refugees that are in those surrounding areas, and they're like being on their third and fourth. They're not even homes. They're just versions of tent cities. So describe for us and help us understand a little bit of the geopolitics in terms of how we navigate that. I thought that was very interesting that they have reached out to Israel. As you said, that's a first. But how else does this play out in the geopolitics of it, refugees and all those things included?
So everybody has to score points, right? That's the essence of geopolitics. There's a small war you may have heard going on between Russia and Ukraine. That's
also playing in, yeah.
Iran scoring points with Russia and Ukraine. Iran is, you know, the enemy of my enemy is the enemy of my enemy in the Middle East. ISIS is out there. The Turkish government is trying to, as always, curry favor with everyone and making friends with no one. Saudi Arabia, which at the moment on some days cozies up to Israel and other days doesn't, again, in the spirit of the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And in the meantime, you know, Israel is undergoing significant, that's the polite word, internal challenges, that's a polite word. And then what always worries is that the graphics captured the imagination for, you know, what did Andy Warhol say, 2 minutes of fame, 10 minutes of fame, and then it dissipates. And there will obviously be point scoring because there will be blame throwing, and that's what worries here. And from the perspective of Syria, which Iran clearly sees itself as legitimately gaining a foothold in Syria, the Turkish-Syrian border, exactly as you say, is, what's your word, tent city or tent cities might be a better term.
Yeah.
How interested are the Europeans to come help when the Germans are obviously focused on Ukraine-Russia? And the world is distracted because of Ukraine-Russia, and the losers of that are the poor people in the rubble.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLPodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Yeah, that's such an important analysis, Amos, as we look at that, that we have such a short attention span these days in terms of what we can focus on and what we need to do. And that that compassion, that instant humanity that I think we all feel as we watch those images. And we're still seeing miracles happen. Even just this morning, we saw another few people pulled out of the rubble 56 hours after, you know, being under a 10-story building. And so there are a few of those. Obviously, hope is fleeting in terms of that part of the equation of finding people still alive in the rubble. But then the next step is the hard one, because it's the one where everyone does lose interest and goes back to the geopolitics that are happening globally and our inability to stay focused on, okay, how do we help this humanity right here? I was describing to someone yesterday that, you know, just the refugees alone is more than the state of Utah and Idaho combined. And imagine dealing with that and then with no infrastructure and no one being able to really function. This just seems like it's going to be a space of a lot of human suffering. And sadly, politicians and people interested in power leveraging that to their own interests. Any paths around any of those pieces, any bright spots or any areas where you say, okay, here's something that could be a good that can come out of this round?
Silence is golden. You know, it's interesting. In the 1999 earthquake, I was serving at the time as the legal advisor to the Israel Defense Forces Home Front Command. And we have a unit that went off to Turkey, just like the same unit went off a few days ago to Turkey, the same unit. You ask any Israeli what he will remember from the 1999 earthquake, and the answer will be across the board. There's an iconic picture of the team doctor guy who I knew, who he and his mates found and saved a little girl. Actually, and it's an iconic picture of when he pulls, literally they're pulling her out of the rubble. And she was interviewed in the Israeli press this week about that. And I think that's what we will remember is that little six-year-old girl. Today she's a mom, she's married, she's got three kids. But hang on, the reason that I reference that is it's one out of 20,000. That's what's so horrible here. And especially in a place like Syria and or Turkey where the infrastructure, the foundation of the buildings is problematic. And we, by the way, we in Israel are very much aware of this. There's a constant discussion in Israel. Are we in Israel ready for an earthquake? And I think probably the answer is some areas yes, some areas no. You know, I remind all of us we had an earthquake here in Salt Lake 3 years ago, and that was not to diminish it in any way, but it was not anything approaching to this. And ask people how traumatic that was. It's extremely traumatic. And we've fortunately here in Salt Lake, much like in Israel, we have totally different infrastructure and capabilities in Turkey and Syria. And I genuinely don't know where the aid will come from and how sustainable the aid is when we will quickly turn our attention back to Russia and Ukraine.
Well, great perspective, Amos, as always, in the region, what that looks like and feels like. And it is one of those moments where we have to make sure our humanity is not a nanosecond humanity, but an extended humanity, and making sure we're trying to help in the right ways to get the right resources to the right people and places that can actually help. Great perspective. Amos Giora, always a pleasure to have you on the show and appreciate your perspective of this crucial part of the world and a really tense and difficult time over there in Turkey and Syria and the Middle East more broadly. Amos, thanks so much for joining us again today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
All right, we will step aside for a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to dig into the fentanyl that's coming across the border, the southern border. Who's at fault? Who's to blame? What did the president say about it in the State of the Union? What did he get right? What did Republicans get wrong? We'll talk about it coming up next. Stick around.